for you to get your outline out that hopefully you're handed on the way in. Love for you to have that so you can take notes and follow along as we go through Matthew. We're going to be looking in Matthew chapter 5 tonight, so if you want to pull your Bibles out and move to that, or whatever electronic device you use, that would be a good time for you to have that. Take notes. Go back over it this week. Look at it. Charge through these verses and keep trying to unpack the truth that God has for us. You know, if you were with us last week, you'll remember that I started our study by calling everyone's attention to the still baffling mystery of Bigfoot. Yeah. Well, we know exactly what Bigfoot was doing. He was trying to find Westbridge. He was trying to come to one of our super friendly, come as you are, always awesome services. And of course, he probably wanted to get here early, go to Miss Tara's cafe downstairs. So Facebook, that people are wondering, mystery solved. Along with what we solved last week, moving mountains, we solved that mystery Jesus was talking about. My goodness, moving mountains is solved, Bigfoot solved. I should really have my own show. This would work. There's nothing on. Everybody's watching Netflix. I should just have my own show. But as for tonight, in our series of puzzles, perplexers, and parables, we come to a very short and very powerful three-word command that Jesus gave us in Matthew chapter 5, verse 48. Just three words. That's all Jesus says. It should be cake to understand three words. But gang, those three words are indeed quite perplexing. You see, with these three words, Jesus commands his followers to be ye perfect. Now, if that old English phrase is too hard for you to understand, kind of like trying to watch The Office on BBC, the original series. If that's too hard, our American language has dumbed that down to just a two-word phrase in our English American translations of be perfect. Be perfect. So that's the marching orders we're given by Jesus. Followers of God, be perfect in your marriage. Be perfect in your child rearing. Be perfect when someone gets you angry. Be perfect in your fear, perfect in your disappointment. In fact, be perfect in everything. Now, you may suggest maybe we're getting the context wrong. Maybe that you're getting the context wrong what Jesus is saying. Well, Jesus gave this command to sum up his exhortation of how people are to handle living with antagonists, how they are to handle influencing the world for Christ, how we are to handle anger, sexual morality, divorce, biblical standards, keeping promises, paying back wrongs done to us, and enemies that hurt us. That's the context that Jesus is dealing with, and in that context, he says, be perfect. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm in big trouble on this one, because I know for sure I'm not perfect, and Jesus is commanding me to be perfect. Well, so much for obeying God, right? Well, some have done just that. They have dismissed this command as an impossibility, and they have settled into a defeated state. Well, others have minimized it as it's an exaggeration of Jesus. We, however, will unpack this verse this evening, and we will solve this perplexer and get to the heart of Jesus' command. So as we did last week, I think it's best to look at what has been misfiring in the actual understanding of these hard sayings of Jesus. And let's get them firing on all cylinders instead of misfiring. So, be ye perfect. Here's the first misfire, or the first wrong interpretation. First misfire number one. Well, this standard must be for saints. You see, gang, some students of Christian ethics wrongly interpret this command saying, well, you see, there are two sets of standards that God has. One set of standards is for the rank and file, and the other set of standards is for his saints. And be ye perfect applies to the saints. Now, they don't just pull this idea out of nowhere, which I find interesting. They get this idea from the very first verse of Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, which says this, and seeing the multitudes, Jesus went up into a mountain, and when he was set, his disciples came unto him. Aha! They think they've got something here, and they say, see, Jesus must have been teaching his disciples. He's teaching the saints. That's why he can go with the be ye perfect. And since it is this sermon that Jesus commands his listeners to be ye perfect, the command has to be for the upper echelon of disciples and godly leaders and saints. Well, gang, that was a good try. But first of all, two big problems here. The first one is that that's really bad Bible study. You see, if you read the entire Sermon on the Mount, if you go through those three chapters and get to the end, you will get to the final sentence, which says this, when Jesus had finished saying these things, the crowds were amazed at his teaching. Oh, so apparently Jesus was talking to everyone. But there's a second reason why God cannot really have a two-tiered set of standards that he's offering, and that's this. If God's leading, come with me on this thought process. If God's leading and God's instructions are to make our lives healthy, and if those instructions are to make our lives more fulfilling, and if everything he tells us to do is to make us more successful, which those are, then why would God encourage anyone to embrace anything less than all of it? That would be like me teaching you how to pay your monthly bills and saying, you don't need to pay all of them perfectly. You can leave some bills unpaid. Paying them all perfectly, well, that's only for the upper echelon. Gang, just like paying 95% of your bills won't work, God doesn't set up an option for the rank and file of getting 95% of their lives in order and leaving the rest as a mess. Gang, there is no higher set of standards for more serious Christians, and there's not a watered down set of standards for the rank and file followers of God. Even Peter too makes this clear that we are all called to the same high calling of God. Peter wrote to the entire church, he wrote this, but you are the ones chosen by God, chosen for the high calling of priestly work, chosen to be a holy people, God's instruments to do his work and speak out for him, to tell others of the night and day difference that he made for you. If any believer thought the stakes were slightly abated for them, they are mistaken. When one trusts Jesus Christ for salvation, they put on a uniform. And that uniform doesn't come off. We represent Christ 24/7, 365 days a year. There are no ball boys on the team. There are no mascots. We're all on the team. We all play. I met with some pastoral students recently, and they were asking me questions, picking my brain, and in that conversation, I said this. In that conversation, I said this. I said, lost my train of thought here. Here it is. I said this. I said, people are watching you, and they're keying off of you. What you say has strong implications, and everything you do is being watched. And when you do something, you are putting your seal of approval on it. The movie that you go to see now has your spiritual approval on it. The music that you listen to has now been okayed for everyone because of your indulgence in it. The words, the phrases, the expressions you use have been verified for use by all because you used them. The places you go, the games you play, the hobbies you choose have all been given the seal of approval because you have gone there and you are doing it. Well, these aspiring pastors, they looked at me with their mouths open and they said, wow, church leaders are under that kind of standard? And I responded, who said anything about church leaders? I'm talking about all followers of God, just like Peter wrote. You see, gang, we're all supposed to be visual examples to the world. I like to explain this to pastors and leaders because this should be second nature to them already. But gang, we are all called to be lights to the world. We are all called to live lives that can and should be lives that others imitate. Paul wrote this so audaciously in the 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 1. Paul said this. He said, you should imitate me just as I imitate Christ. What a tremendous command of confidence he gave. To live a life so in sync with God that you can actually tell people, imitate you as you imitate Christ. Jesus says, be ye perfect. And friends, that includes me and you. Perhaps a proper takeaway for us as we begin unpacking this would be to ask ourselves, can I say what Paul did? Can I say, imitate me? Westbridge, you may not know it, but you have a giant rubber stamp under each of your feet. And anywhere you go, you have placed a God seal of approval on that place. You have a rubber stamp on your mouth that constantly God approves what language to use, what conversations you should be having, the jokes you tell and the attitudes you live in. You have a rubber stamp on your eyes that endorses what you feel is right to feed your mind and what to meditate on. Gang, we are inundated with these rubber stamps and people are watching. Jesus wants us to live in a way that allows us to say to others, oh, imitate me as I imitate Christ. Okay, the second misfire, the second improper interpretation is this. Hey, I'm ahead of most by society's standards. Gang, in this misfire, we adopt a different benchmark or a different yardstick than the one God has for us. In point one, we learned that there are not two moral standards inside Christianity. But here in point two, we find that there are two moral standards when you look at Christianity versus our society. Christianity has a standard, and the world we live in has standards. And we might as well establish right now, society's standards are not God's standards. Jesus' disciples fell into this misfire right here in Matthew chapter 18, verse 21. It says, then Peter came to Jesus and asked, Lord, how often should I forgive someone who sins against me? Seven times? No, not seven times, Jesus replied, but 70 times seven. You see, Peter was actually asking a question that was commonly discussed in rabbinical circles of that day. People would wrong one another and then struggle with, how many times am I supposed to forgive this person? Well, the answer that the society and the Jewish leaders of Jesus' day was giving was three times. That was the answer. Three times, they tell them. You forgive them three times, and then you do as you feel best. Peter here is trying to appear generous when he says to Jesus, Lord, how many times is the right number to forgive someone? Seven times? And that's when Jesus makes it clear. Society's standards, even at their best, even exaggerated, are not God's standards. Jesus says God's standard on forgiveness is to be keep forgiving. Just keep on. Friends, God calls us to stand out in the world, doesn't he? But we will not stand out if we are living the same standards as those who don't know God. Jesus said this, you have heard the law that says, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say, love your enemies. Pray for those who persecute you. In that way, you will be acting as true children of your Father in heaven. It says, if you love only those who love you, what reward is that? Even corrupt tax collectors do that much. If you are kind only to your friends, how are you different from anyone else? Even pagans do that. And then the verse we're looking at, Jesus says that right here. But you are to be perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect. Gang, the application here is this. Don't adopt society's standards. Don't adopt society's standards. One weekend, about 5 years ago, maybe even a little longer, my family and I were riding up Interstate 81, and we started to get hungry. That means I got hungry. And it wasn't long till one of my children spotted one of those big giant signs on the highway, and it was for Chick-fil-A. And since this was before we had a Chick-fil-A here in Peaburg, I thought, cool, well, this will be a real treat that we don't normally get. So we pulled in, starving, drove up, and guess what? Closed on Sunday. What? A fast food place on an interstate? Closed on a weekend day? Well, what are they instituted blue laws again around here? No, even the blue laws, those are laws that say you couldn't be open on a Sunday to do business. Even though those had already been repealed, those are nowhere in play. The government said that standard's gone. Even though that was repealed, the owner of Chick-fil-A said, I don't allow society to set my standards. He says he abides by the standards he believes God's given him. And so, he says, people are to rest one day a week. Let me ask you, has the conviction of Mr. Sam Cathy, has that proclaimed his faith to the world? It sure has. The standard of the fast food industry says that Chick-fil-A is nuts. Chick-fil-A has lost over $1 billion a year in sales due to this man's adherence to rest one day a week and his desire to be ye perfect. Gang, Jesus makes no qualms about it. There are God's standards and there are standards that our society has. And Jesus says, God's standards, they are going to clash. They are going to clash with the world's standards. And Jesus said so. He said, if you lived on the world's terms, if you lived on the world's standards, he says, the world would love you as one of its own. But since I picked you to live on God's terms and no longer on the world's terms, the world is going to hate you. Westbridge, when you live God's standards of child rearing, it will bring about great reward. But with it, it will also ruffle feathers of people who are living by the world's standards. Jesus says, keep on doing it. Keep on living my standard. God follower, even if you quietly and graciously bow out of shenanigans and mischief and carrying ons of the people around you because you're trying to live God's standards, that's going to irk people. That's going to create strife. But Jesus says, don't compromise. Stick to your godly standard. Son and daughter of God, when you take your higher road, it will irk those who see your choices but lacked the bravery and the fortitude to buck the world system and go with you. Jesus says, even in the backlash, even in the criticism, even in the animosity, don't cave in. Don't back away. Don't settle. Don't lessen. Don't waver on God's standard. Instead, be ye perfect. I remember a day back at the firehouse when the men were talking about their little kids watching a movie. Their kids were 10 and under. And the men were sitting around talking, and they were talking about a movie that their kids liked to watch. The name of the movie was Ted. It's a story, they tell me, I've never seen it, it's a story of a stuffed animal, a teddy bear, that comes to life and lives a very vulgar, partying, sexually charged, almost rock star life. Well, that's the movie they were talking about. Well, one of the firemen was explaining his kids 10 and under, how it was explaining how his kids loved that movie. Even though it's R-rated, and the other fireman was saying that he would never allow his kids to watch that. Well, I sat back and I just listened. I wasn't in this conversation. I just took it all in. And I listened as each man presented and fought for his standard. And I found it interesting how the more upright father was labeled in the conversation as, better than thou. He was labeled as self-righteous and a goody-goody. Now, I never heard any of that kind of attitude from the wholesome father. It was just the fact that the wholesome father's standard instinctively made the unwholesome father feel guilty and made him feel irresponsible. And instead of that guy moving up to the higher standard of the wholesome guy, it was easier to just attack him and try to get him lower his standard. And that leads us to our final misfire tonight. This is another wrong interpretation. Wouldn't 99.44% been perfect enough? I mean, hey, it's good enough for Ivory Soap, right? And I think we all know, let's be honest, no one's actually going to be perfect. No one's going to get there. Only God can do that. So why didn't Jesus just tell people, be 99.44% perfect? I mean, in reality, that would be pretty good. That'd be pretty good if we were that perfect, 99.44% perfect in obeying God. 99.44% in thinking God's way. 99.44% in winning our Christian battles. Wouldn't that be good? Let me tell you something about that Ivory Soap slogan. It has been over 100 years since they adopted that. Procter & Gamble made that claim over 100 years ago, and they set their standard on their Ivory Soap as 99.44% pure. It's pure. 99.44% pure. That has been what their soap is. And guess what question? Guess what question they have had to field the most over the 100 years? The question is, let me give you a hint. Nobody's asking about the 99.44% pure part. The question that people want to know so bad for those 100 years is, what's that little over 0.5%? What's that 0.56% impure part? They want to know, what's the allowable imperfect stuff? Gang, you and I both know. If Jesus said, strive to be 99.44% holy. If Jesus had said, endeavor to be 99.44% righteous. If Jesus said, live out God's standard 99.44% of the time. If Jesus said that, we would all be excusing and justifying anything and everything we did as, hey, that's my 0.56% impure part. And God accepts that. Westbridge, when my kids started driving, I didn't tell them to be 99% careful. When I look at assembly instructions for a product that Miss Kelly orders through the mail, I don't adhere to 99% of them. I follow them 100%. Gang, Jesus isn't handing us a frustrating goal that can never be reached. He is, however, giving us a target that encapsulates everything and ensures spiritual success. Gang, we need to embrace Jesus' command to be ye perfect as an umbrella that will give us safety. Had Jesus chosen anything less, he would have opened the door for disaster. On January 28, 1986, NASA launched its, at that time, latest space shuttle. This space shuttle was going to make its 10th flight, nine times it's been out in space. It was going to make its 10th flight. Now, the shuttle is an elaborate machine comprised of over 2.5 million parts. And each one of those parts must function perfectly. In addition to the spacecraft, the crew has to be trained and practiced to utter perfection. The weather, the day of the launch, must be within a perfect window of acceptance. And on January 28, 1986, NASA, with all the good intentions, signaled go flight. NASA thought everything was covered. But as we all know, they were not perfect. The one thing they failed to pay attention to was how was the weather the day before the flight. You see, the weather had been unseasonably cold, and so it iced up actual picture. And that cold caused a rubber O-ring to get hard. And that O-ring needs to be soft to do its job of sealing one of those booster fuel tanks. 2.5 million things, minus one, were right. 2.5 million things were only one away from being perfect on the Shuttle Challenger. And 2.5 million things you would think would be minus one, would be perfect enough. It would be perfect enough to get 2.5 million minus one. Perfect enough. But the shuttle Challenger's flight lasted only 73 seconds. And seven brave men and women were lost. Now, gang, no one really blamed NASA for being imperfect. But just as importantly, no one wants NASA to have a standard of anything less than perfect. Gang, if we demand nothing less than be ye perfect for rockets, how much more important is it that we embrace that standard that Jesus set for us on be ye perfect on how we love people? Be ye perfect on how we listen to God's leading. Be ye perfect on how you live the life God has for us, and be ye perfect on how we shine our light into a dark world. Jesus' words are a reminder to us to never accept casual Christianity. Never accept it. Jesus' words tell us never accept fractional following. Never accept close enough in Christianity. Never accept I'm good enough. I'm good enough. And never accept fair enough morality. May our goal, our standard, our aim, and our target be complete Christ-likeness. And that's why Jesus says, be ye perfect. We ask the band, the worship leaders, and the prayer team to come back and ask you, as we take this last couple minutes, to speak to God. Is there something God's putting his finger on in our lives? Are we able, like Paul, to say to the people we rub shoulders with, hey, imitate me. Imitate what I do as I follow Christ, because I'm getting that much of it right. I'm getting so much of it right. If you just do what I do, you're going to be in good shape. Paul did that. And I believe we're called to the same thing. Because when we say, imitate me, they're not seeing rubber stamps on things that they shouldn't be. We're not saying this is okay by what my lips have been doing. This is okay by where my rear end has been planted. This is okay because of what you've seen me do. And it's not. No rubber sales like that. I make my mistakes, but believe me, I'm not telling you that standard, that's a world standard, and it's okay by God. Let's talk to God as we worship.
It would have been a shame if NASA had scrapped the entire shuttle program in 1986. They didn't. They said, we can be fixed. We can get it right. And they launched those shuttles well into the new millennium.
Well, it would be a shame if you walk away from tonight thinking, I can't be perfect. That's not what it was about. But it is about confessing. It is about saying, I haven't gotten it right. And Lord, I want to. I don't want to blow up. I don't want to implode. I want you to help me get it right. And God stands there with arms wide open saying, I have been waiting for that. Let's shoot you to the moon. And we'll get it right. So, as we close out tonight, we're going to spend our last couple minutes just talking with one another. But I'll be up here with the prayer team. And if you need to talk, a little help trying to get connected with God, we're up here for you. But I don't want to forget the part of we are supposed to confess when we need to get right with God. You don't have to do it with somebody. You can do it in the quietness of your heart. But if you'd like to, I'll be here for you. So let's spend the last 5 minutes talking to God. Lord, I thank you for the way you continue to lead us and guide us. And I thank you for these tough sayings of Jesus that they aren't so hard to understand. They are hard to live. And I pray that you help us to do that. Lord, help us to lean on you, lean on your Spirit, lean on your truth, but also to lean on one another. And Lord, as we spend this last time, this last 5 minutes, just getting to be with one another, rubbing shoulders, iron on iron, I pray that it'll be a time that we grow closer to you as we grow closer to each other. In Jesus' name, amen. See you next week, 7 o'clock.